Good afternoon. Everyone can hear me, I hope. All right, I'll have the
I can hear
marshal
that.
call the calendar, please.
The Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Brappold, Judge Smith, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Diane B. Brappold presiding.
And good afternoon. So this is the Minnesota Court of Appeals, and our today's date is July 22nd, 2020. We have three matters on our oral argument calendar, and I see that counsel for our first case are present via WebEx. And so I will ask the marshal to call the first case in our calendar, and then I'll have just a few remarks before we proceed.
Case number A19-1899, Timothy John Gettle, appellant, versus Tanya Lorraine Gettle, respondent.
Right. And counsel, I just want to make sure of a couple of things, some of which you might be used to, although we've all made slow adjustments to arguing and appearing via WebEx. It's still not quite routine even for the court. So a couple of things. First of all, you'll note that the judges will often put their turn on their mute button, and that we do that to improve sound quality of the recording as well as actually the event today. So listening to you is easier if we diminish the number of people for whom the microphone is picking up. So we'd ask you to do the same thing. If you would mute your microphone while you're not presenting, we would very much appreciate that. And then secondly, I want to remind you of something you probably know, which is that you should identify yourself for the record before you start your remarks, as well as the client that you represent. And then to please keep an eye on the clock. You'll see, hopefully it's visible to you, the marshal has got an iPhone positioned. She will have 15 minutes counting down. That's, of course, what both of you get for your primary remarks. And then the appellant has an optional 5-minute rebuttal if you choose. So with that, I think we're ready to proceed with the arguments. So counsel for appellant, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Tyson Smith, and I represent the appellant, Timothy John Gettle, from up here in Grand Marais. Understanding that the foundational principle we're here about today is that spousal maintenance is awarded to meet need, the question for you is whether the district court erred and abused its discretion by awarding the respondent, Ms. Gettle, more maintenance than it found she reasonably needed. The district court in this case made some very specific factual findings of what Ms. Gettle's needs were. And I think this is perhaps the rare case where the appellant agrees with the district court's finding of Ms. Gettle's needs. There's no qualm that the $3,696 a month that it found she needed is accurate. When the district court awarded this number, it went through Ms. Gettle's budget and analyzed it for reasonableness. It analyzed those expenses that she claimed in light of the marital standard of living. And when it did that, it reduced some that it found inflated. Things like food, which found $600 was too much a month for food, reduced the utility bills, a couple other things that Ms. Gettle admitted were her budget showed more than what was there. What the district court did not do is it did not reduce any of what we might call the discretionary expense categories. This is all in the paragraph 29A1 of the order where the meat of this issue comes from. I was unable to find any distinction in Minnesota law that draws a line between what you might call something that serves a basic need and something that is a more discretionary expense. I think that's probably better just covered by the fact that some expenses are reasonable in light of the standard of living and others are not. It seems to me the court and counsel respondent drew this from the phrase from the Arundel case that the obligee spouse is entitled to more than just the bare necessities of life. Well, the court's finding in this case is not just the bare necessities of life because it included all of her claims for travel and entertainment and eating out and personal allowances. So it's the court's finding of her reasonable need is not just the bare necessities.
So counsel, I appreciate that you are taking the time to explore what is meant by need, but it seems to me that you have started off on the premise that spousal maintenance should be equivalent to whatever budget a district court sets. And we all are familiar, I think, with the budget determination process during the course of dissolution. But I guess what I'm struggling with is although that's certainly a factor, and it definitely the judge considered it here, there is language in the spousal maintenance statute that suggests that the district court has discretion to award spousal maintenance in an amount and for a duration that is deemed to be just. So that it isn't, strictly speaking, limited or capped by the budget amount. And if I've got that wrong or you have a different view of that, please just explain. I would like you to go there. Thank you.
Your question is straight on point. The district court certainly has broad discretion in awarding the amount, but that amount should not be against the district court's own finding of what the needs in light of the standard of living are. The probably the best place to look at that would be respondents' findings themselves, or her proposed findings, excuse me. The court's initial observation of what Ms. Gettle's claim was, which is she says she needs $4,926 a month to support herself in light of the standard of living during the marriage. That number is 100% of what she says she needs in order to maintain herself at the standard to which she's become accustomed. She agrees or admits that she has about $2,000 a month in income from a part-time job if she wants it, and asks for a $3,000 a month shortfall in maintenance. So the court looks at her claimed expenses and holds that, well, you know, some of these are kind of much. We're going to reduce them by $1,200. But then it seems to ignore that finding when it awards maintenance in $3,000 anyway. So to answer your question, does it have to be just the budget? No, that's not the only factor, certainly. And the court certainly has discretion to award maintenance in just about whatever amount it wants, provided that the amount is not against the facts on the record. In this case, they're the facts that the district court itself found. That is the abuse of discretion here. The district court sought to justify that, I think, by discussing the standard of living and arguing essentially that it's supposed to be a separate line item. And this really comes through in paragraphs 9 and 10 of the order on amended findings. Is the standard of living something that's separate and apart from what a spouse's reasonable needs are? The answer is certainly no. The standard of living is the lens by which we view all of a spouse's reasonable needs. And that's clear. The district court's own order did that when it weighed what the reasonableness of Ms. Gettle's claimed expenses were. It has no other
Mr. Smith, can I ask you, so you do equate, the question I have is the phrase in terms of standard of living is mentioned twice, once at the beginning of the statute and at the intro in terms of the needs relative to the standard of living, and then it's also a separate factor, but you seem to be equating it that indeed a monthly budget equals the standard of living. Am I understanding that correctly? And do you have a particular case that would so equate the two?
I'm sorry, off the top of my head, I can't remember. I do believe that the way a spouse shows their needs to the court can be in any manner. It just happens that a monthly budget is the one we find most common because it's the easiest way to present to the court what your needs are. Is it the only way? No. Is it the one the parties utilize in this case? Yes. And whether or not a spouse's needs, and needs in a broad context, are reasonable is, once again, depending on what standard of living the court finds that the parties enjoyed during the marriage.
And isn't that essentially what the court did in its ruling? Perhaps not explicitly, but it separately defined the parties' monthly budgets, which then the court equated as their needs, but then also looked at the party's income, the standard of living separately to come up with an amount. And isn't that the sort of discretion that the statute and our case law would expect of a judge in defining a monthly amount of spousal maintenance?
No, and I think that's because what respondent claimed she needed, this $5,000 a month, was 100% of what she claimed she needed to support herself during the marriage. That's the evidence the trial court had, is that respondent said $60,000 a year, $5,000 a month is what I need to meet the standard of living during the marriage. By finding that number was too much and then ordering maintenance in that amount anyway, the court has either double counted some of the more discretionary items that respondent needed, or it's just simply ignored as finding. Either one is inappropriate. It appears to me that the overview.
Council, may I ask? So to understand, I appreciate the idea that that you're proposing that the budget should reflect the standard of living, that that's the lens in which you decide what, like, for example, for housing or eating out or vacations or whatever. But I'm wondering then, in your view, so if a couple had at the end of, you know, the categories, paying for the categories of needs that were described, at least in this case, had a lot of discretionary income left over, and that was part of their standard of living such that they could indulge hobbies or, you know, for gardening or, you know, buying LPs or occasionally, you know, splurging on this or that. Should there be sort of a splurge category in to reflect the standard of living in a budget? Is that how the standard of living that would let you occasionally buy things because you have great discretionary income to maintain your standard of living? How does that get factored in if it has to be in a budget item?
Judge, that could a splurge line item on a budget be part of the standard of living? Absolutely. Almost anything can be part of the standard of living as long as it's reasonable in terms of the party's marriage. So having a big leftover amount at the end of the month for items that don't lend themselves well to a truly discretionary category, can that be part of it? Absolutely. But that's not what the district court did here. There was actually, in Ms. Gettle's proposed budget, there was a small slush fund or slush amount. It was a small amount, maybe $100 for unnamed discretionary personal allowances. I think hair might have been in there, but the court did that. So in this case, the court did include a small amount of surplus discretionary not attributable to a specific line item in a budget income in its finding that Ms. Gettle needed $3,696 a month. The overview reason here for why the court seems to have, what I see is the court's reasoning for justifying this award, is it just felt uncomfortable with my client, the appellant, earning so much more and having so much more a month than Ms. Gettle. And that's a very egalitarian view, but it's not the law in the state. The obligor's income is certainly a factor to consider as part, it's written in the statute, it's something we're concerned about as to whether or not the maintenance award is appropriate. But the obligor's having more income, more high income, does not necessarily or by itself mean that the recipient needs more. They don't lend themselves that way. And it seems to me that that's what the district court did here. Particularly if you look at paragraph 10 on the order for amended findings, it says something to the effect of, Ellen's got three times the discretionary income of respondent, and that's just not right. And then it talks a little bit earlier in the paragraph 6 of the order for amended findings that Lee doesn't answer the question for us whether or not having a high level of extra disposable income may be considered. And respectfully, I disagree with the court's answer there. It seems to me Lee does answer that question. In that case, the court reversed the maintenance amount and sent it back to the district court to either A, make more specific factual findings to support the award, or B, to reverse it. The bottom line is that maintenance is not a lifetime profit-sharing program. It's awarded to meet need, and whatever method the spouses come to for proving need, in this case they used a budget, but they could do it in another way, that's appropriate.
Council, you made a quick reference to this, and I just want to make sure I understand your position. I think it's at, the addendum on page 24, that the husband will have triple the disposable income is one of the findings that the district court made, even after the court's award for spousal maintenance. You do not seem to, at least I didn't catch it, contend that that's inaccurate or clearly erroneous.
There's no allegation here that Mr. Gettle will have the ability to pay $3,000 a month in maintenance. The obligor's ability to pay is not an issue.
I'm talking about his ability to pay. So if I'm sorry if I'm not clear. So the addendum on page 24, let's see, where was it? The district court at the bottom of the page says, even after paying the court's award of $3,000 per month and his own expenses, petitioner, the husband, will still have nearly triple the disposable income each month of respondent wife. So So you don't contend that that's clearly erroneous, right?
No, that's an accurate statement.
Yeah, and I understand what you infer from that, that you think that the district court, at least I think I understand, is somehow attempting to equalize income between the two. But I think it does go to the heart of the district court's analysis, and I appreciate that you addressed it, which is what exactly did the Lee case decide? Did it have any determination as to how disposable income should be treated? And your answer is yes, it did, because it reversed and remanded the spousal maintenance award. Is that right? Do I follow you?
That's correct.
All right. Very good. Thank you. And I, if you have some more comments to make to wind up, I just wanted to make sure I followed you on those two points.
Just that balancing income without more to come to a maintenance award is without authority or precedent. I thought that was a fairly compelling statement from the Lee case. And that winds up to the final takeaway I have, which is that in this case, the court made very specific findings of what respondent needed. Those findings included things that she claimed were necessary to support herself and the standard of living. She also, just as a brief reminder, she received the house with no mortgage. She received a new car with no payment. She received a substantial retirement account. She used
the property settlement counsel was by stipulation. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
Okay, just so we're clear. Yeah.
But it is certainly should be considered in whether or not she's able to meet the standard of living. Having a nice
and the
house.
District court did consider it, right? The district yes. court did consider whether Mrs. Gettle was able to meet her needs based on the property settlement and her income. And you aren't, you're not criticizing that part of the district court's determination.
No.
She can't meet her needs. Right. Okay.
I think I misunderstood the question. The last thing you said just slightly, but in any event, final position of the appellant is that this maintenance amount is in excess of what the court found respondent needed, and the appellant respectfully requests the amount be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. So the marshal has reset the clock, I think, and we are ready. I think, or I don't see the 15, but now I do. All right, so counsel for respondent, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, ma'am. Please, the court, Tim Costley on behalf of respondent Tana Gettle. I'm not gonna be very long in my arguments, and I think one of the things that I would like to point out in the beginning is my understanding of the appellant's position and what we're fighting about today is that number one, the income findings are undisputed. Number two, the necessary living expenses that were arrived at by the district court are not disputed. I do not believe, hear, or read that the affluent lifestyle of the parties has been disputed. I haven't been pointed to a specific finding or a specific conclusion that is argued to be clearly erroneous other than picking the sum of $3,000 for spousal maintenance. If the court says to my client, if this court says, well, tell us what specific item in the necessary living expenses was relied upon by the district court to come up with its standard of living increase in the maintenance, I can't give that to the court. What the district court did here, in my opinion, is it went through and made an income finding for both parties, which it has to do because that's one of the steps, is there an ability to pay even if there is a need? Then the second step was determine the necessary living expenses of both parties, determine that there was a need by my client for maintenance, and then the court made an adjustment to consider the standard of living during the marriage. There was testimony by both parties about the standard of living to include discussions of how they lived, how they paid their bills, the types of vacations they took, They were people that went to the casino and spent money on gambling that my client testified about, and the appellant didn't deny that. So, yes, the court made findings on necessary need. The court listened to the testimony of what the lifestyle was, looked at the incomes, did not do an income equalization, by the way, which is inappropriate. Even after the payment of maintenance, the appellant still has about 30% of the total disposable income. And again, not to look at disposable income as a factor, but at some point, and again, as attorneys, we wrestle with this maintenance all the time. It's a nightmare, and this is another case that shows why it's a very gray area. But there's no other way for the court to include standard of living in its determination. If
Mr. Costley, I'm taking from that last comment, you disagree with Mr. Smith's response to Judge Smith's question that in order to factor in standard of living, there actually has to be a category. I think the reference was made to a slush fund. Here it would have to be, I suppose, about $1,500 if I got the math right, of a standard of living account or fund within the monthly budget. So you're disagreeing that the law does not require that for a court to factor in standard of living for a total maintenance amount.
I am, and in my opinion, in my reading of the statute and the case law, and this is why district courts have wide discretion in this area. They have some parameters. They have to make some findings of need. But as the court correctly points out, standard of living is referenced twice in the maintenance statute, once in the beginning paragraph and once as a factor. And I think without that wide discretion, it becomes extremely difficult. At least it would seem to me to be extremely difficult to factor in standard of living if we had to line item that as an expense. It also begs the next question, where Judge Harris did some discounting of living expenses that were submitted by my client. So you wonder, well, why would you discount certain expenses and then award an amount of maintenance that's greater than the necessary need? And I mean, I can't answer that, but it seems to me that he tried to do his job, spend time and analyze the necessary expenses first to determine what that baseline is. And then he has the discretion, after figuring out what the need is, he can take the testimony regarding standard of living and then determine if there should be an additional amount of maintenance to do what maintenance is supposed to do, is let both parties try and live close to the same standard of living that they did during the marriage. And fortunately for these folks, and uncommon in many cases that at least I have, there isn't enough money to go around. But this is one of those rare cases where there is. And he has the ability to pay, and they've had a good lifestyle. And my analysis of what the district court is that. I don't know how else it could be done other than they'd have to change and put a line item in for standard of living. Or a judge would end up having to, for lack of a better term, pad the food costs or pad the recreation costs or add other things in. And I guess, again, in my opinion, that's why the discretion exists. And I think it's, so counsel, when you read Judge here, yeah.
I just want to follow up for a moment. I didn't mean to interrupt you. You would take that answer and then maybe extend it or take a turn with it to comment on the district court's discussion of the Lee case. And this is the comment I'm referring to. It's in the addendum at 23 in paragraph 6. Counsel for appellant talked about it. The district court said the one question not answered directly by Lee or the statute is whether a highly disparate level of disposable income may be considered by the district court in its maintenance determination, or if maintenance is capped by a finding of reasonable need. So if you'd comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
Well,
thank you.
Sure. I mean, Lee clearly says you can't equalize income. I mean, that comes out loud and clear. What are reasonable needs? Well, Lee says that's a loose category. I don't see Lee capping maintenance. I don't read Lee to cap maintenance at a specific amount set in the reasonable or basic living needs. And I think that's what's talked about in that case. And I think they recognize that, you know, again, as they state, we expect that a district court will do its best to get both parties to something close to the standard of living that they had during the marriage. I don't read Lee as a hard and fast precedent that says once you set this as your basic living expenses, you can do no more. I think Lee recognizes that there is, I don't want to say gray area, because there is, you know, it has to be based upon some testimony of lifestyle and how they live, but there is discretion here for the district court. And that's how I read that case. And I don't think Judge Harris went outside his bounds when he did what he did. And if I don't know how, if you folks read the transcripts, but I mean, I pointed out some instances where just to support the testimony of what the lifestyle was, the things that Judge Harris heard when he made, before he made his decision. There are a myriad of possible outcomes that can be supported by this record or any record. You can say a lot of different things could happen, but my understanding is that the district court has great discretion. And I think my opinion and my reading of Judge Harris's reasoning for what he did, I think it is supported by the law. I think he is entitled to take into account standard of living, and that's what he did. They may not like the amount, but that to me, I don't see error. I don't see anything that stands out to me as clearly erroneous. He did have good reasoning for everything he did, and the record supports a higher standard of living. And I think maybe, and we can't ever speculate about what a mindset is of a district court, but you know, when you look at a 31-year marriage and you've got a couple here that has worked very hard to build what they had, and we can't get into saying she got more than he did because we had a stipulated equal settlement here. He gets the business and the income, and she took some assets. But you walk away after a 31-year marriage, and I think maybe reading into Judge Harris's mind a little bit, he's saying, I don't think it's equitable or fair to send my client away with just the basic amount of income and send Mr. Gettle away, retaining all the benefits of that income. I think the standard of living that they had, and I think the statute requires a more of an equalization of standard of living, and he did that. If he did it 50-50, my client would be getting more money, but he didn't. You know, I think, again, that's his discretion. That's what was going through his mind. He didn't like the outcome based on just the reasonable needs maintenance, considering what the standard of living was. So, in my opinion, I respectfully submit that there was no abuse of discretion. There aren't any real specific findings that have been disputed here. It's just that his decision is disputed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. So the marshal has reset the clock, I think, for 5 minutes for rebuttal. And Mr. Smith, we're ready to hear from you for rebuttal if you choose.
Just briefly, Mr. Costley said something interesting in response to your answer about in response to your question about the Lee case. He says that, well, it needs to be based on something, some testimony or other evidence. And That's the point that appellant is trying to make, is when we say spousal maintenance needs to be based on need, I think it's undisputed that the spouse who is seeking maintenance has the burden to prove that they're entitled to maintenance and what the amount should be. And when the spouse seeking maintenance says, Judge, this is what I need in order to live, that's the number that we live at. So a hard and fast bright line rules don't work in family law. Well aware of that. But a hard and fast bright line rule that maintenance is capped at need is probably not a good statement. But a rule that says maintenance is capped at what a spouse shows, what a spouse proves to the court that they need, that makes sense. In this case, Ms. Gettle proved that she needed $3,696 a month. That's the amount that she needed. The court says she's got some income. Maintenance should be something less than $3,000. That's all I have, Judge.
Thank you, counsel. Any other questions from the panel? Doesn't look like it. All right. So our thanks to both lawyers today. We very much appreciate the briefs that you submitted, as well as the arguments that you presented to us today. The matter is now submitted to this court for its decision, and we will issue a decision within the statutory timeframe.